Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, Recruiting Animal here. Before I get going, I'm using a new sound system they've got on Blog Talk Radio. I got to check and see if anybody can hear me. Jerry, can you hear me?
Roger that.
Okay, because I was shouting at you before and I got no answer. Did you hear me then?
No, and I was sitting here preparing to take over for you because I thought that you were lost at sea.
Well, I was ready. You would. I have to tell you, it was scary.
Everybody!
Yeah! Okay. Well, I'm going to do my introduction now.
Okay.
Take a seat on.
Go with
take
it.
Take a seat
and
on.
And I'll
the
do
couch.
The shout out okay. like usual.
Like usual. Okay.
Like
everybody.
Usual.
Recruiting
yeah,
Animal
go.
Here on November 6, 2013. I got to tell you, it sounds weird to me. So I hope it sounds okay to you. I want to tell you about an article I read yesterday in recruitingblogs.com. It's all about diversity. Our favorite topic was by our good friend,
God.
Crystal Miller. Some guys say, this is what she was talking about, you can tell the viability of a romantic couple by analyzing the connections of the partners on Facebook. So she says you can do the same thing with a team in an office, a work team. You can predict their viability. You see, this is how it is. These guys, these scientists say a good couple has diverse interests. So on Facebook, you can see their connections don't overlap too much. But a bad couple, an unsuccessful couple, they share a lot of the same Facebook connections. The idea is that if you have diverse interests, each partner is always exposing the other partner to exciting new information that they couldn't get on their own. But I have to tell you, in my personal experience, the people who have the same interests as you are the people you like best. You like it when you can talk about things that are interesting to you, not things that are interesting to them. I had a girlfriend once who liked to talk about shoes. You know, I liked it when she looked good in shoes. I liked it when she went shopping and bought shoes that looked good on her, but I didn't want to hear the blow-by-blow of every shopping trip she took, and she wanted to tell me about that, but she didn't want to hear about the things I was interested in. Is that good? No. And I assume it's the same with a work team. If you're all interested in the project, it's going to be great. But if you're all really more interested in your own things, I can't see how that's going to work at all. So, you know, you might be able to judge the viability of a group by looking at its Facebook connections, but I think the solid group is going to be the one that's not distinguished by its diversity. And that's why companies always want to hire someone who's a fit. They need someone with strengths. I have a problem with that word. With strengths that add to those they already have. So the person's going to be different. You know, but aside from that, they want someone who's just like them. If they're interested in motorcycles, they want someone else who's interested in motorcycles. He might know more about tires than brakes, but he's still primarily interested in motorcycles. And I got to tell you, to close off, I know one group where the members are quite diverse, but they're primarily interested in the same thing. And that's where you can find them on Jerry, what show is this?
This is a Recruiting Animal Show!
How do I sound? I mean,
you sound good.
You sound good.
You what?
Yep.
Yeah. You sound clear.
Well, they got this new system, and it sounds odd to me. So I called in. I called in on this thing. I didn't know if anyone was connecting with me because I was talking to Jerry. Wasn't answering. So then I called it on the phone, and they said the host has already called in. Goodbye. Anyway, so it worked out kind of. But I didn't get to review my notes. So I know my introduction was a little disjointed. What do you think? That people are going to be better friends when they're diverse intellectually, or when they're much the same? Yeah. Okay. I don't think so either.
I'm not interested,
but it didn't work out. So let's bring on the guest, okay? What's his name, Jerry? Dale Destino.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Talk a little more so we can see. Introduce yourself so I can see if I can hear you.
Lay it on us, Dale.
Very good. All right. Well, yep, my name is Dale Destino, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Work for, but do not represent right now, Kelly Engineering, part of Kelly Services.
You didn't have to spend. Why'd you mention the name?
No, they made him say that.
Let's go with it.
All right.
Yeah, so.
He doesn't. Here, everybody, look, he doesn't represent the company. If he says something dumb, it doesn't mean everybody else in the office is stupid, too, okay?
That's the point.
But
it is animal.
Wait a minute. What if he says just some things that are so insightful, so powerful, so professional? Are we supposed to not assume that anyone where he works is of that mindset?
We don't have
Jerry?
To worry about
well,
that.
I don't know. Jerry, it's really simple. They don't believe in their people.
What?
Jerry, they don't believe in their people, so they would rather back away from it than let this guy be a genius.
Hey, this is where he didn't want to go, okay? Just let him finish with his introduction.
Sorry,
who are you, Dale?
That was great. So, recruiter for about 13 years, exclusively in engineering and manufacturing. And that's actually where I got started, doing mechanical drafting and design work for a couple years. And, man, did I suck at that job. So when the opportunity to get into recruiting, actually the first recruiting company I worked for placed me at my first engineering design job, and they let me know they had a recruiter opening. So I jumped over there and worked there for a couple of years and came over here ever since.
Okay, good for you. Are you? I noticed you like kickboxing. Is that right? Yes, you've got a picture of yourself all beat up.
Yeah, I see you posted that picture too. But yeah, that was I tried to block a monster cross punch with my forehead, and I was very successful in it.
Okay. But does that mean you're an alpha male? That's an ongoing question here.
You know,
are you an alpha male?
I heard last week's show. I do not feel I am. No, I think I can lead and I can go with it. Either way.
Okay, so you don't need to dominate. You don't mind leading, but you don't feel a need to dominate. Oh, okay. But why do you like fighting then? Why do you like boxing?
It's quite liberating knowing that there's always somebody better than you out there that gives you something to strive for. And as you can see from that picture, I think I may have emailed you, that picture is post-cleanup too. My face looked like a war zone or something from that movie Saw when it first happened. But
I can't take it. Okay, I got another question based on your pictures. I see you got a son. How old is he?
4 and a half.
Could he be a recruiter?
I think he shows a lot of me when he was little. He's very social. He loves to be in front of people. Kind of likes to be the center of attention a little bit, but doesn't mind stepping back as well. And so, I'm trying to ramp him up because what the heck?
No, you raised an interesting question. I read an article this week that said charismatic people are better recruiters. I don't think that's true, but you described your kid as someone who might have a lively, attractive personality. Do you think that's essential to being a recruiter?
I think it's essential for those like me who don't have any other skills going for you. I think that also very, very introverted and methodical people can be very good recruiters, especially if they follow very precise systems or something like that. But I think overall, that relationship building is probably my stronger suit, just either for work or in personal out in the world.
Okay, I've got a couple of things. First of all, you sound low-key. You don't sound like a guy who has to be the center of attention. So, number two, you do have a technical education, and you were a draftsman. So you do have a lot of, I assume, technical knowledge working for you on this job. Am I right or wrong?
Yes, definitely. Very, very helpful to have that background. I mean, if somebody wanted me to do a drafting job right now, I'd call you a damn idiot because I have, you know, no,
that's
no,
not what I'm asking you. I'm asking you. Let me ask you something else.
Hey, real
who
quick.
You,
technical interjection. Will you please
ahead.
Open up Mike A. Stringer's line?
Mike A. Stringer's back from the dead? Okay.
All right,
let me make sure I got everybody's line open. Okay, sometimes, you know, people are coming in late.
Now, there's hundreds of them. It's tough to manage.
Okay. Everybody feel free to join in here if you want to.
I am slurping on a 1.25 liter Coca-Cola.
So, Adam,
okay.
Do you believe
well,
that somebody who's not a alpha male and has an outgoing personality can be successful as a recruiter?
Yeah, that's what he said.
Yeah, that's what you said.
Don't tell me what I said. This guy said he's not an alpha male, but he feels he's got a good personality.
Mike, what you heard? What you heard, Mike?
Got an outgoing personality can be a recruiter. Listen to the tape, damn it.
No, Mike. Animal says that you don't have to be a nice person, a personable, congenial person to be in recruiting.
Personable, I mistake for outgoing. So you don't have to be a personable person to be successful
no,
in our business.
No, has nothing to do with it. So, as per Animal's Facebook page yesterday, and I take it he's still preaching that today. You can be a dickwad and make millions in recruiting.
Well, I guess
Dale
that's why I'm on my way to being a millionaire.
Dale agrees with me. Dale,
yeah.
You agree with me. You just said you don't have to be a personality, right?
I fully agree.
Yeah, okay, good.
I know plenty of introverts.
And you know what? He'll kick your ass from Pittsburgh to New Jersey, Mike, if he wants to.
Come over here
right
now, Dale.
Why does
Ollie
come back to fighting?
No, okay, Dale, I want to get back to the kid, to the son thing. Your son's only 4.5. What if he was 12? Could he do your job?
I think most 12-year-olds could do my job. But, no,
there
I
you
think
go.
I feel that he's probably cut from the right cloth, and I make it very – I put him in kind of awkward situations where he has to be on the front line, he has to solve problems, that type of thing, and you know, just kind of see how he does.
Okay, I'm not talking about your son. I'm talking about someone who's 12 years old. The thing is with you, you've got an education in your field. So you're coming into the job with technical education, and I assume that helps you understand the requirements of the client and understand and assess the candidates as well. But lots of recruiters don't have a technical education. Jerry's not an IT programmer, and yet he specializes in contract programmers, right? So I'm wondering if somebody – Jerry started that, I don't know, when he was in his early 20s. Could he have started it 10 years earlier since the education isn't a factor?
Absolutely. I think that if you know, one's willing to listen, one's willing to put the time in and build their network around what it is they want to focus on, absolutely. I just –
Yeah, so you could be 14. You could be 14 years old and do this job. That's my point. Don't make me, you know, strangle a point to get it out there.
Once my son turns 13, and that's in January,
yep.
I'm going to start
yep.
paying him $10 bucks a shot to call candidates and tell them they're out. Because that's the part of this job I hate.
Yeah.
I hate telling
like
people they didn't
but
get the job.
Let me tell you something. That's not really a joke. Both of my kids, when they were teenagers, I didn't have them calling candidates and telling them they were no, but I had him posting jobs on my website. By the time my son was 16, he would be looking through resumes that came to my inbox.
Yep.
Teenagers can absolutely do this job, and both of my kids have.
And save $200,000 in wasted college education.
Beautiful.
Well, my son's at Notre Dame Law School right now, so I don't know.
Oh, even worse, a lawyer. God.
Okay, the main thing that I was trying to raise, though, the only problem is, if it's got a little boy's voice saying, sorry, you didn't get the job, that might not be so good, okay?
That'll ease the pain a little bit. Hey, I'm only a little kid, but I'm supposed to tell you that this just isn't going to work out for you.
I don't know, you have a teen accent and come from a place where your mayor smokes crack and nobody holds
yeah.
that against you.
But my dad said he'll keep you on file and call you right away if anything else pops up for you.
Yeah, you're right, Mike. Our mayor's a big fat man who likes to drink in public, get drunk in public, and smoke crack. That's what he does. The question is whether he actually had the guy killed who was trying to market the video that showed him smoking crack. That'll be the big news.
Oh, did that guy do
it? I like when they asked him if he smoked crack, and he said, I'd have to see the video.
Yeah.
All right, okay. We're getting off track.
Dale.
Yeah.
Dale, you've got some You've got some bad words. I've got a, I don't know if you checked out my website like you should have. I've got some a list of animal bad words, but you've got bad words too. I don't like your bad words, but you don't like it when people say, to be honest with you. Is that right?
That's kind of a funny one. You dug that out of the archives. Yes, I feel like when you say that, what are you, not being honest the remainder of the time? I don't know. I just feel
it's just
a bizarre thing to say.
It's just a saying. It doesn't mean anything, literally. It means I'm speaking from the heart. Okay, now when you say I'm speaking from the heart, maybe you could say the same thing. Well, aren't you normally speaking from the heart? No, people don't always speak from the heart. They hide things that they think, you know, might hurt the communication or the relationship. But this guy's, I'm laying it on the line with you. I'm not hiding anything. Wake up, Dale. Grow up. You're not 12 years old, okay?
Well, to be honest, I find it annoying. There you go.
Okay.
Speaking from the heart, I find it annoying.
Okay, good. Now, you're a big fan of virtual assistants. I'm very interested in that. I've never used one, but you obviously have. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I've used a variety of different virtual assistants, everyone from resume sources overseas to even people in my own community that, you know, don't work with me. They don't share an office. They don't see me on a day-to-day basis, but I give them certain things to do every day, and they report back when it's done. It makes things very easy for you, and it's cheap.
Want to give some examples? Want to give some examples?
I have hired a few sourcers, strictly people.
I'm losing you. I can't hear you. Can you? Everybody else hear the guy?
You're fading.
Uh-oh.
Talking to the phone.
You got it.
Yeah,
all right.
Speaking to the phone, okay?
To be honest. No, so I've hired people to source resumes, nothing more, and just send me resumes that they see fit with certain keywords in it. I pay them 10 bones an hour, maybe 12 bucks an hour, and I'll give them a $500 bonus, basically, if I can get the people hired. And to date, I've shelled out a few $1,000s just based on that alone. So they're doing the sourcing at night. I don't care when. They send them to me. I call the people in the morning or the next day, and makes life pretty easy for me. To me, I would just like to be on the phone all day.
Who are these people? Are these 14-year-old kids or a housewife who's got a few hours in the evening? Who are these? Are online sourcers. Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly, yeah. Some have had HR or recruiting experience. Others have no experience at all. That housewife thing, that's actually one a friend of mine that was looking for something to do a few hours a day. And I gave her some job orders. Here you go. And she produced a number of good candidates. I probably placed four people off of her.
For 10 bucks an hour?
For 10 bones an hour.
For 10 bucks an hour?
Yep.
Wow. You said offshore, too. It sounds like you got a sweatshop in China.
Oh, yeah, that, too. Some overseas stuff, too, but I don't know who they are or anything. I've just used companies overseas for, 10 bones an hour, and they'll do, like, LinkedIn updates for me, do job posting, stuff like that as well.
Well, let me ask you a question. Are they making Walmart products with their left hand while they're sourcing for you with the right hand?
My company won't let me discuss that.
Yeah, I don't want to know what they're doing with their left hand.
Yeah.
Okay. Now the thing is, Dale, on your blog you said you don't believe in offshoring, so I'm surprised to hear that.
Offshoring from a manufacturing perspective, I guess I don't necessarily not believe in it. I think we probably overdo it from the manufacturing landscape in the U.S. A lot of it's come back this way too.
But on your blog,
he believes in it if it benefits him.
It was only 3 years ago you wrote in your blog it was primarily about admin work. Do you have virtual assistants do all your admin work?
Do not. No, I actually don't have anybody doing any admin or any work for me at all right now. I do have a job rec open right now for an internal sourcer position, so somebody that would actually come to my office. But other than that, no, I've been doing everything basically since the recession, like 09, 010. I've been doing everything on my own. I haven't been quite as busy.
Okay, so you place contract engineering personnel. Am I right about that?
I do not anymore. I moved exclusively to direct.
Why?
Okay, but you were in contract. Is that right?
Yeah, for 7 years.
Is my mic on?
Yeah.
Well,
you want to say something?
The question was why did you move away from contracting and into direct only?
Client-wise, they started moving more and more towards direct after like 2010, and a little bit more lucrative from a pay scale for me. So I moved off, got rid of some of the contract headaches, and I still end up placing a contract person one or two a year probably, but exclusively more or less direct.
You know, Jerry specializes, as I said before, in contract personnel, and I saw that you wrote a long article selling the idea of contract work. Like, contract work is great should have been the title, and it sounded to me like you were recruiting permanent employees for contract work, and you really had to sell very hard about the idea of contract work, how fantastic it is. Is that right?
Yeah. I do stand by that, too. I think there's a lot of good reasons why one would move to a contract situation, particularly if they wanted to do consulting or if they liked a little bit more, I don't know if you say control or what, but I think that article was the benefits of working contract or something like that. I could probably write an equally long one of the downfall of it, but that article got probably 200 or 300 fan/hate mails back to me, and I kept a bunch of them, but for the most part, it was very positive feedback from people that were doing that exact same business model.
I think the sooner people realize that we are all contractors, the better.
You pretty much nailed it.
Back to you, Emma.
Yeah, uh-huh. You said he could sell the opposite. No, anybody could talk. I mean, I don't have anything really great to say today, but the guy said that if you're looking for security, when times are bad, the companies are going to hire contract people, not permanent people. So you're way better off being on contract. Is that right?
In that situation, absolutely. I think I referenced the blacksmith in that, building wagon wheels or something like that, where...
I don't think so, no.
Oh, okay.
But you can tell us now. Go ahead. Go ahead, shoot.
Well, the long and the short is in... say 1800-something, people were hired to do one job specifically, and they weren't put on anybody's payroll. They would say, okay, I'll build you these wagon wheels for your wagon at 40 bones or clamshells or whatever it was, and they'd just do that for a variety of people all day and all night. Well, one person fires you, it's not that big a deal. You still have other clients to maintain. But I don't know, kind of going back to...
That's a fantastic. You really sold me.
Yeah, it was,
okay,
so where do I sign up?
Yeah.
Hey, I don't
know. The thing
that
I want
to
know,
care. I want
were
to
you calling? Were you calling, permanent employees and saying, "Look, I want you to take this contract job. Leave your current company. You really don't have any security there. You're better off, moving around or being free to move around." And when the recession ends, who do companies hire first? Not full-time employees. They hire these contract guys because they don't have any obligations, with benefits and stuff like that. The companies love contract people more than permanent employees. Did you call people up who were working full-time and try to move them away from their jobs with those arguments? That's what I'm trying to find out.
You know, I guess I can't say for sure that we were necessarily calling people that were direct employees at that time, but it was people that had
been. Why do you call them
direct
employees instead of permanent? I mean, I understand what you mean, but why don't you just say permanent employees?
All right, we'll
go ahead.
Permanent.
Because they're not permanent.
Yeah.
They're
I gotta
not.
Go with him on this one.
Why would you call something that's not?
Okay, sorry. Okay, direct employees.
They're direct
go
employees.
Ahead.
That means they're employed by.
Listen, all everybody listening to the show means permanent. Okay, go ahead.
All right, so. It wasn't necessarily calling people that were in permanent positions. It was people that had been in permanent positions in the past and had never worked on the contract side. So I think that I had that thing out on the web in probably like the 2003 time frame when the economy had tanked. And so people were pretty scared of, they had been with 3M for 20 years and now they're looking at a six-month contract deal. It was a tough pill for them to swallow.
Okay, so you were, and you were using these arguments. You were selling people on the job. Is that right?
Exactly. That's exactly it. Yep.
Uh-huh. So you consider a recruiter primarily a salesperson?
I consider them more on the sales side. Yes, selling either the opportunity or the idea of something new or bigger and better. Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Can you remember anybody you sold with these arguments?
No.
Figures. They all get amnesia. They can't remember their placements. Jerry, come on. That's ridiculous, isn't it?
Man. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he has so many that he can't remember a particular one.
They all blend together
yeah.
at this point.
Yep. It's all the same. Yeah.
I got to tell you. I got to tell you, I asked Jerry because I talked with him about this last week, about how ridiculous it is, and he was on my side then, but when it comes to the show and I look for a little support, what do I get? Oh, I don't know. I don't know. He's as bad as the guest. Jerry's as bad as the guest. He doesn't know anything, and neither do they. This guy published a long article, Dale DeStano. He published a long article about how
in 2003 contract.
He can't remember one case where he used those arguments to sway somebody. I had to drag it out of him who he was talking to in the first place.
You mean like you mean you want the name of a person?
Not the name, the story about, yeah, I called this guy from 3M who'd been there 2 years, and he said, no, I don't want to take that contract. But I told him this. I told him that. He came back with this argument. No, then I used this one. I want a real
animal.
Life
haven't
story.
You realized by now that no one's going to be as good of a guest as I was?
You know, Mike, I got to tell you, there were a few good guests this year. You were one of them. Okay, there were some other good guests too. Anyway,
the scores though do reflect Mike Astringer's the best guest I believe in several years.
No, that's not
I don't
true.
Know.
I was.
Nope.
There you go.
Prove it.
I got like a million points.
Amy, since you're on, do you have a question for this guy? I need someone to beat him up a bit. Go ahead.
Oh, and you're counting on me?
Jeepers.
Oh, why not?
All right, okay. I did not go to college, and I don't know anything about technology. Can I still be a good recruiter?
Yeah. He said yes.
Yeah?
Dale.
What if I'm not charismatic? Animal doesn't think I'm very nice, so.
No, you are.
So
you are charismatic, Amy. You are charismatic. I recommend you to other radio shows as a good guest.
Well,
there you
so here's my question for the guest then. Since Amy likes to wear low-cut shirts, should she do phone interviews or Skype interviews?
Definitely Skype. I wear low-cut shirts too.
Yeah.
Low-cut shirts?
Life would be so much easier if I was a hot woman. That's all I'm going to say. I would be running this place by now.
You just got to work with what you're given. What can I say?
Okay. Dale DeStano, back to the guest for a minute. Look, you wrote another long article about, you know, you call it company hires versus transactional hires. In the company hire, you mean a strategic hire, someone who's going to come in and to stay with the company long term and rise high up in the hierarchy and maybe become the leader of a division or the general manager. So you wrote a long article about that. Are you willing to talk about that article as well, or is that just something that came to you and has no relationship to your real life?
That one, okay, you dug something out of a little more recently, not 03. But, yes, love to talk about that.
Let's do it.
Do you have some examples about that? Go ahead. You just talk about it, and if you're wandering, I'll try to steer you back to reality.
That's all I've ever asked. So the long and the short of that is I feel like if you work with a company long enough or you understand their culture, who does go the distance there, what their career paths are within the company, making a hire like that is a lot easier than just calling a company off the whim and saying, hey, I got this great guy. He's going to be your next GM. But as far as examples go, I had one guy last year that was out of, I think he was out of GE and been there for many, many years, and his division moved and he wanted to stay in Minnesota. And so I knew a company that loved to hire GE people. This guy had moved through the ranks at GE, and it was literally one interview. I don't even know if they talked about the actual job they had open, but they were talking about where this guy could go in the future. And that was it. It was a pretty simple deal for me. And not to mention people that fit that kind of fast-track mentality, they interview so well. You just put them in front of a hiring manager, and you don't really have to worry about them. You don't have to coach them. You don't have to follow up with them every 5 minutes. It's very, very easy. But, as far as executive bandwidth people at GE, there's only, 3,000 of them in the whole network, so you got to be kind of lucky to have somebody like that.
You know what? I like you because you sound like a modest person. But, I mean, you didn't answer the question. You didn't. You're telling us in this article how we can identify people who are good for a long range. So if a company comes to you and say, you know, Dale, I want someone to hire someone as a manufacturing engineer, but I'm not looking for someone who just can stay in that position, you know, making wagon wheels. I want someone who can move through the ranks and I can promote, who's promotable. And so you told me a story of completely irrelevant. You know, come on. Has anybody ever come to you and said, Dale, I want a strategic hire?
No, nobody has ever come to me and said that before, no.
So what made you write this article?
That story I just told. The deal with that is that you pretty much nailed it. A good long-term company hire has already done that type of thing at a previous company. So they don't even necessarily have had to have been promoted a bunch of times, but they, if they're with a company for 5 or 6 years, if they had 2 or 3 different positions in that time frame, even if they're lateral moves.
Look, let me change. I'm losing my audience. I know I can feel them just dying there, okay? So here's
Most people
what you say.
Up.
Doesn't matter. First of all, you don't care if a candidate is employed or not, because there's lots of good reasons to be unemployed. Yes or no?
There are plenty of good reasons that somebody could be unemployed, yeah.
So you don't care if your candidates are unemployed. Am I right?
Do not care. Nope.
Okay. Now, you say Jack Welch and his buddies on his team, they would ask the candidate over and over again, like it was a police grilling, why did you leave your last position? Or why are you interested in making this move? And they do it just like policemen to find out if the person was going to give the same answer all the time or if they were just, you know, shooting the breeze. Do you do that?
Yes. Looking for consistency, absolutely important.
So no. Tell me a story where you've done that and it didn't work out. So what do you actually say to the guy? Why do you want to leave this position?
Yeah, why do you want to leave? What prompts you to look for something new? So
okay. How do you get your candidates? First of all, do you ever call someone up out of the blue and then say, "Why are you looking?" And he says, "I'm not."
Yeah, absolutely.
But you don't say why you're looking to somebody who's not looking that you call up. What do you say to them?
So if they're not looking, are you open to looking at anything new at this point? Are you open to listening to any new opportunities?
So you ask just standard yes or no questions?
I guess so. I never thought of it.
Yeah, man. Open it up a little bit.
You know what? It's my favorite answer when a hiring manager asks the candidate, why are you looking? And the candidate says, I wasn't. Mike called me.
Yeah. So.
Yep. Total compliment.
Dale, are you with us on this? You don't ask a guy who's not looking why he's looking. What do you say to him? Why might this interest you or something like that?
Yeah, well, would you be open to look at something new if we can get you bigger,
okay,
better,
that's
next biggest
question.
Deal?
Okay, let's go to your cold call. Nobody likes this question, but I love it, okay? How do you approach people? How do you find people? Do you just work on your company database of people who have applied to the company, or do you go out looking for people who haven't –
tiny little
advocated.
Walmart hands are over there passing resumes to him all day long. Didn't you hear that earlier?
They're a good group.
Yeah, they're selling pants on the left hand and making phone cold calls for him on the right.
Okay. So this housewife or somebody in Taiwan or wherever, they give you a bunch of resumes. You call the guys. You've never talked to them before. What do you say?
I say, hey, I came across your credentials. I'd love to see what you've got going right now. Or would you be open to look at any new opportunities right now? Either now or in the future,
mm-hmm.
actually. Excuse me.
Yeah. Okay.
Seriously, you're just asking people if they want a new job, yes or no, want to buy a chicken?
How about a duck?
He didn't say that, Jerry.
I didn't get
Jerry,
that.
Jerry, he didn't say that. He wants to know now or in the future, would they be open to looking at something, you know, that would advance their career?
A.K.A. want a new job, A.K.A. want to buy a chicken. Come on, people.
Yeah. That's...
I remember
Please
that.
Buy your shirts at Walmart. I need to
I'm serious,
work.
Man.
That's what he should be asking. I'm on his side this time, okay?
Jeez.
You call the guy up.
Yeah, so
okay,
you want a new job. Oh, no thanks. Okay, sorry, bye. Know anybody that does want a new job? No. Okay, thanks, sorry, bye. Come on, man.
Okay, Dale.
I think Jerry agrees with the philosophy that you should never call anyone, client or candidate, unless you have something to offer. And just saying, do you want a new job, is obviously like asking, do you want to buy a chicken?
Yeah, no. Well, you're only calling the person because you do have a job. You're not calling them just out of the blue. You're calling
them
because
you're not
going to
ask the question, or at least I wouldn't ask the question, are you looking for a new job? I'd ask the question, if I had this, this, and this, would you be interested in having a conversation?
Well, to date, nobody's ever said, no, get out of my life, see you later, bye. They always say, well, I'm not looking, but what do you have in mind?
Nobody's ever told you to get out of their life? That's awesome. Because I think any of us that cold call on any sort of regular basis have been told to get out of somebody's life.
Yeah.
Okay, Dale. So
what happens then?
This is where the personable and charismatic skill that I bring to the table comes to play.
Yeah.
Nobody's told me to shove it. You know?
Are we going to see
Dale,
that charisma on
Dale.
The call?
Dale. Okay. Yo. So they say they're interested. They say they're interested. Oh yeah. What do you got going? What do you say then? Do you tell them about the job?
I tell them about both the job, the level of the position. I kind of feel them out for where they are. You know, so, okay, so I understand you're at this level of position now. What would you think of looking at something like this in the field of industrial controllers?
Today, you know, the problem is, Animal, when you ask these questions is that you don't seem to grasp the concept of just having a conversation with someone. You just seem to think that everybody works from a script.
Yeah, I don't understand having a conversation with right. You're right, Mike. I don't. And I don't know how to get rid of people at parties. Once they do start talking to me, I'm a bad mixer. Okay?
Which is why you don't want to go to a party, because you may end up talking to somebody and the whole thing freaks you out, so you sit right there on your couch.
That's the fact that he's not making more than a placement a year and didn't get laid in college.
Yeah. Okay, Dale.
That's awesome.
Not that again.
Yeah, but I managed to have a girlfriend who wanted to talk about her shoe shopping adventures, okay?
Yeah.
And then she
anyway.
Saw the same bedroom we saw in that video, and she booked.
And once we heard that animal, we were all refreshed, thinking, he is a ladies' man. He really is
no,
a ladies'
I'm
man.
I don't want to talk about shoes. I'm not that much of a ladies' man. Anyway, let's go ahead, Dale. Let's talk about recruiting. When do you
let's
talk
do
about salary with these people? When do you, first of all, one question, do you tell them the company name? When do you tell them that? And when do you talk about money?
Usually I'll talk company name on the second go around, the second time I connect with them, when I feel that they're actually interested or if they call me back and want to learn more. I'm happy to disclose what the company is. Money, usually on the second call. I'm usually pretty good at figuring out where people are money-wise in their current titles or their current companies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, sometimes it's kind of a crapshoot, so I'll ask them, hey, not to put the cart in front of the horse, but where are you for money and what do you need to make a move? And if they say, you know, well, I'm at 85 now, I need 90 to make a move, and this job pays 75, well, that makes it pretty easy, and we can say, hey, who do you know that would be interested in looking at something like this?
So then you assume that nobody would want to ever work for less?
Generally speaking, nobody wants to take a step down.
Okay, Dale. Sorry, I'm not clear. So you get them, do you close them, do you pre-close them on a bottom line salary to make a move even before they've gone out to the company to interview?
Yeah, or get a good range established or something like that. As long as I know that they're in the range that the company is looking at, I don't care if they're high end or the low end, if they're in the range, even if they're a bit higher and they go out and visit with the company is over the moon about them, $5,000 is not going to make or break the deal.
Oh, okay. So hold on. So you're saying, what are you earning right now? And do they always tell you, or do some of them have reservations about doing that?
I would say 80% don't have reservations. Most are pretty upfront because they don't want to waste anybody's time. But the few that are maybe slowly testing the waters out there, they'll withhold it a bit.
And what do you do?
I say, okay, if it's a higher level position, what side of six figures are you on? Are you north of 100 or are you south of 100?
So you start playing games with them.
I guess.
I wouldn't. You just can't do that. I mean, because then you're setting the stage that, okay, they're running the show. You'll play.
All right, I can appreciate
salary
that.
Salary to me isn't a game. I wouldn't say high, low, pin the tail on the donkey, poke and hope. You know what I mean? It's a game, and I won't play it. Back to you, Animal.
Amy,
and this will all be coming out in my upcoming book, by the way. My e-book.
Amy's our salary expert now. Amy's a salary. Come on, Amy. What do you think about it? Critique this guy's approach.
No, if somebody doesn't want to give up their number, I will say, all right, then, I can get you close to this number, and I'll give a number. And it'll be a conservative number, but then I'll see how they respond to that. My goal in life is to always make an offer higher than what they were pre-closed at. But they're not getting to the interview stage until we talk about specific numbers. It just won't happen.
Yeah, but you know what? If you can get them a higher number and you're offering them less, how do you know that's going to be interesting to them? If the company's willing to pay 90 and you say, okay, I can get you 85, so they say, well, 85 is not that exciting. Well, are you going to change your mind then and say, okay, let's up at the 90. Maybe I can get you that. Amy.
If that's what, maybe. I mean, if they're not excited by 85 and we need to go to 90 and I know we can get 90, I don't have a problem talking 90.
But Animal, you're on the wrong path with the whole thing, dude. People do not change in 9 times out of 10 jobs just for a higher salary.
That's true. There has
to be some other underlying career goal that's not met, perhaps maybe even they never get any of the new projects, or somebody was just promoted into the job that they thought they were going to get. So you're really having a secondary discussion, this salary thing, trying to nail them down. It's about the work. There's something different that you should be talking about, not, well, all we've got is 85. You want to take a look at it or not? That's not the conversation. It's what's happening now or has happened recently that's made you think, hey, it is time to make a change or at least look around. That's the conversation that you should be having with people, not, hey, do you want an $85,000 job?
No,
perhaps
Jerry,
I've said too much.
Jerry, you like to pin the people down, right?
No. What do you mean pin them down? Get them to swear to something?
Yeah.
I need to know what somebody's salary is, and I need to confirm that if the offer is reasonable within that range, are they ready to go interview or do they want to look into it? That's all I want to know. I'm not going to say, well, if the I can't get into this, dude.
No, Jerry. I want to understand what you – I don't understand you.
Okay.
If you ask a person how much she's earning, she says, I'm earning $100,000 a year.
Right.
And then you want to know, do you say, well – will you go for 110? What are you looking for in a new position? Do you ask them
that? Something like that. Yeah. I'll ask,
okay,
you know, how important is salary in this decision for you? And they'll say, well, you know, I at least want some kind of a raise. And I'll say, what are you thinking about there? And they say, I don't know, you know, 105, 110 or something. Then I say, cool.
I'm done with it. Hey, Jerry, can I clarify something? Are you an animal role playing right now? Is that what's going on?
No.
Like oh, okay. Because I think everybody's jumping on the guest case, and I don't think he.
I'm not. I'm jumping on Animal.
I don't think he ran down the field about, you know, pre-closing a candidate on a specific number before the candidate even knows the job, the company, the location, or anything. So can we move on?
Oh, you're in charge of the show now, Nahez?
Man.
It's the recruiting animal and Nahez show.
Yeah, no, I want to come back. I want to come back to Dale. I'm trying to understand this issue with the salary. It sounds like some, maybe Sandra and Jerry, they try to nail down what the candidate needs to make a move.
Let me make sure that does not get on the record here. I do not nail down what they need. I find out what their salary is, and then I identify if there's going to be a salary issue. If somebody thinks that they're going to get a 40% raise because, well, somebody, one of their friends just got a job and they got $150,000. I want to know where they're getting their influence regarding salary. And if it's all in typical fashion, then I'm cool.
Okay, Dale.
Yo.
I'm sure Dale agrees
with
me.
Remember, I haven't forgotten you. What if the person says to you, what are they paying? What do you say?
Oh, I'll tell them straight away that, you know, the range on this one's 70 to 80, say, plus bonus potential, plus a bunch of other goodies.
Yeah, but if you tell them 80 at the high end, and then the company offers them 72, aren't they going to get angry? Aren't they going to feel frustrated?
I would think they would, yes. But
what if you tell the guy 80 and he's making 50, you spoke first? I always answer that question with, come on, man, I can't go first. You know that.
Fair enough. But, I don't think I would ever call somebody at 50K that would be looking at an 80K position. I think that would be quite a leap.
I think that depends on what vertical you work in. I work a lot in sales.
That's probably more.
$30,000 variance in base salary between two very similar roles, and the OTE is higher, whatever that is. I mean, that it really depends on the vertical you're working in.
Totally, yeah. Engineering's a little bit more transparent than that. I would definitely agree with that in sales, though.
So nobody's answered my question about, can you give the candidate, if they ask what they're earning, can you tell them the top end?
No,
I don't
do that because you're not the one that's negotiating with them. The client is going to be negotiating their salary.
Yeah, but how do you make it attractive if you don't tell them a good salary?
Animal, you keep thinking that salary is the attractant.
I agree.
Dude, you're in the wrong discussion with people, dude. I'm going to talk to you offline about it.
I got to go.
We're going to solve it, okay?
I got a question for the guest. Can
you teach
him
how to recruit, please?
God.
Go ahead. You got a question, Nahez? We can barely hear you.
I'm sorry. You can't hear me very well. I'm sorry. I'll louden my voice. Since he works at a big, huge company as a basically like a third-party recruiter, the vast majority of us on the line, with the exception of Amy, who's a corporate recruiter, are independent. You know, we work for independent boutique-type agencies. And I want to understand from the guest, what is the motivation to work at a big, huge company, and what tools are you getting versus, you know, being up against out there in the engineering field against the little boutique guy?
You know, the ones we struggle with the most from a competitor standpoint are the small boutique ones. You're absolutely right. You know, I've been here for 11 years, so there's some comfort in that if my position were to go away or if recruiting were to tank on the direct hire side, I would be able to find something else internally. Pay wise for me it's pretty lucrative. I mean, they make it, they try to build it around a smaller boutique type company, just to attract talent to come to represent a company like us doing direct hire positions. But like MRI, I think we compete with quite a bit, and then just complete one off specialty niche type companies are who else we compete with the most. But tool wise, we've got good enough systems in place. We've got a few. I guess I won't name them because there's one I don't much care for. But you know, Career Builder, all that type of thing, Premium LinkedIn, and all that. But the next logical move for me would be to move out either on my own or to a small company.
What would happen if you didn't make a placement for say 3 months?
3 months, couldn't say for sure. Either they'd move you to something else. I guess it really depends on why somebody's struggling. But there have been plenty of people that have left or been asked to leave that have gone 3-4 months with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And one thing that's really nice about us, too, is we have – the company as a whole has major house accounts, so we get a lot of their direct hire overflow of on the direct hire side.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is that a good enough answer for you, Nahez?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. So what if you've got a candidate who you find out has a blog in a foreign language? This is a true story, by the way. I'm not making it up. Has a blog in a foreign language and really analyzes all the people she has met in the United States, in her profession, and, you know, ridicules the ones she thinks aren't that bright, and including the people who interview her who aren't that bright.
Oh.
What if you found that out? Would you rule out the candidate, or would you argue that it's irrelevant?
God, it's just bizarre. Yeah. I don't know.
Would you dig that up? Kelly Blockdyke wants to know, why is it so important what somebody's salary is if they say that they're open to what the range is?
Okay, it isn't important, because I'll tell you another story, a true story. Harry, who's going to be a guest in the near future, he recruited a guy who was way, way underpaid. And he advised the client, forget about that. give the offer the person the going rate, in it, which would be a huge increase. And they didn't agree with the recruiter. So they came in and lowballed the guy. They gave him a substantial increase, they offered, but it wasn't, you know, what the going rate was. He, now that he'd wisened up to what the market was doing, he said no, and he took a job somewhere. He took a job somewhere else. So sometimes the actual earnings, what the person's making, is irrelevant. It's a matter of whether they're interested in the range.
Yeah, just about like 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago, we had a candidate who I believe earlier in the process was given this wide range for the salary, and the candidate is making lower than usual, lower than typical. Well, this candidate wanted, I think it was like a 35% increase from 60 to 80. He wanted 80,000. The customer said, no way. Not going to bring anybody and inflate their salary that much if that's what they have to come on board here. That was their official policy, and it took, well, it took my mastery and skill to bring it together at like 72, I believe. But their policy was, well, no, we're not going to do it. Even though 80 was certainly within their range, they're not in the business of just fixing somebody's previous salary problem. So, I don't know.
Okay, they're lucky they didn't lose the person, Jerry. They're lucky for
no, they're not. This kid's lucky that he's in a fast track for some hot new technology, regardless of what he thought he needed to be making or what some of the other hapless recruiters calling around the country saying, oh, I can get you a $90,000 job. Well, sorry. No, you can't, or you would have.
Okay. I'm going to tell you what happened with that person with the blog. He was a great candidate. I was shocked. The company refused to hire her, even though she was technically a very good candidate. They said, we have a friendly office here. You know, we don't want someone who's divisive. I don't think that was necessarily reasonable. Who says she was divisive in her personal dealings? She just had this, like, snitch column in a foreign language. I mean, so what?
But that is the weirdest story I've heard today.
Okay, it's only the weirdest story you heard today. There's lots of stories
I met
now,
somebody once that put mayonnaise on their hot dog.
Okay.
What's wrong with that? You slice the hot dogs like lengthwise a couple times, and then it kind of makes a little sandwich with it.
Oh my gosh!
A little tomato on
Dale.
There.
Yo,
Dale.
Hello.
Dale. Okay. What if you got a candidate who swears like a sailor in the interview? Is that going to influence you?
That has actually come up before. In manufacturing, it's really not that uncommon. Like, a sailor might be a little over the top, but people that cuss at me on the phone, or to me at least, it doesn't really faze me. But I'll tell them flat out, I'm like, hey, you know, that type of, you just scale it back in the interview. It's probably not going to be that big of a deal if you get the job. But engineering, really not that uncommon.
Okay.
And I got another question.
Go ahead.
What? Thank you. I was curious, since you work at a big, huge company, and I think that's great, oftentimes candidates, especially in engineering, feel very transactional about us. They think we're like the teller at the bank window sometimes, okay, because they're very technical, and they're really not all that interested in becoming our buddies. They just want, you know, to know what the opportunity is. I'm assuming that you probably witnessed a lot of that as well. Do you ever utilize other, like, management personnel to, say, close a deal with a candidate at your company? Would you say, my manager wants to talk to you about this or whatever, something of that nature?
Generally speaking, no, but we will do that kind of, like, I don't know what you would even call it, but
buddy sale. It's a buddy sale.
Yeah, exactly, yep. So we would do that where if we think early on something's going on, I'll say I'm out for the day. Next Tuesday I'm going to be out. I'm going to have such and such call you. And we'll kind of hit it like that, from a closing perspective. Anything earlier than that, usually not. But I got really into pre-closing people and using a variety of different avenues a couple of years ago when I had way too many fall-offs and, things falling apart at the last minute.
salary becoming an issue again, relocation.
Yeah,
all
expand
that.
On that. That's really good. I expand on
yeah,
on
tell
how
us some
you're,
stories
you're
about that. Here we're getting the last 6 minutes. The truth always starts coming out. Okay, be honest with us. Tell us about those stories.
Well, as far as your pre-closing, I think, especially in that later 2000s time frame when things were actually really good, people were looking for the bigger, better deal pretty regularly, and I had way too much. I think I lost, like, who knows, $200,000 one year in deals that had fallen apart, $2,000 in total fees. And so I started closing people early and often, you know, depending on what the situation was, getting spouses on board, talking about relocation, sending them information on the city, you know, living here for 30-some-odd years now. It's, you know, it's pretty easy for me to talk about Minnesota. But, you know, if you saw us last night on the news, we got hit with a pretty good snowstorm. So it's kind of playing to whatever people want to hear in a relocation situation. Some people are into snow, some people aren't. Using
so that's your big issue, relocation. So relocation is your big problem
relocation
for you.
Relocation was my bigger problem, yeah.
Okay, so how did you solve that problem by pre-closing? What did you do exactly? You notice this guy has told us about one search, that one search with the GE guy. He's had an hour to tell us about all the searches he's done in 13 years. He told us about one. Here's your
That's
chance
the only
to tell
search
us about
I've done.
Another. Yeah, so, go ahead.
So
tell,
I,
us about, tell us how you solved that problem with the reload.
I had one guy that applied for a job from Texas, for a job in North Dakota, right on the Minnesota border. And usually I won't even call people like that because I'm like, I don't know if you know what the climate is here. But I call this guy, and it turns out he had family in the area. And really the kids were on board of relocating to get closer to grandma and whatever else was the case. So that was the angle we had to sell him. And we sold him on Minnesota school districts being second to none and things like that. And that's all he really needed to hear. So he ended up living here, relocated. I think it was like frickin' January or something, and lived here for a handful of years. And they ended up moving back to Texas, last I heard. But so it worked out for a while.
What's the story? That's a stupid story. I wanted to hear how you pre-closed somebody.
The pre-close part was the fact that
I want to hear a story where you fell off. Oh, forget it. Okay, and you
had
your big chance there. You could have given us some real. You told us a story with that no struggles in it at all. I wouldn't have called the guy, but you know what? He sold himself on it. That's not what I wanted to hear.
That's an easy pre-close.
You blew it, and then I wanted to hear what you learned by blowing it, you know? That's like if you go to an interview, Dale, and they say, what's your greatest weakness? I got to tell you, Mr. Interviewer, I used to have a huge problem with, you know, with fall-offs, especially with relocation involved. I lost a huge amount of money in Y2K. But you know what? I managed to solve that problem, and this is how I did it. This is what
yeah,
I do now with
reloads.
Yeah, that might be the answer, but you got to tell me a real story and a solution, okay? That's not what you just did. I got to scold you. I warned you in advance. Come with examples. Tell me stories. Don't let me down. It's too late now. There's only a few minutes left. I'm going to ask you some quickies. Okay?
Shoot.
So
you didn't
lightning round?
Yeah, lightning round. What about a great candidate who brags in the interview that she's the best in her field? Is that a problem for you?
Probably going to be a problem, yes.
Why?
Because if you're the best, I don't know, people would be seeking you out. You'd probably already have whatever job it is you're looking for. I think that knowing that you're really, really good in a certain area, but striving to learn more, wanting to get better, wanting to better yourself, is a much better approach in an interview.
Okay, would you rule her out, yes or no? I'm almost out of time. Would you rule her out?
Absolutely would not. I would absolutely love to have somebody like that go on an interview out in the world representing
me. But would you prep her?
Okay.
Would you prep her on what to say?
I would definitely prep her.
Okay, like, here's the case. You send out your candidate. The hiring manager knows her personally from before and doesn't like her. The team thinks she's great. What would you advise the hiring manager to do?
I don't know. I think
is she good looking?
The low cut shirt.
She turned him down once. Why doesn't she like him? Or why doesn't
they're
he like her?
They're both women. They're both women.
Oh, catfight.
Oh, she's prettier.
Yep. Don't send out the hotties. It's just a fact. All the other
don't
women are jealous. They don't want it.
Okay, last question. Okay, Dale?
Shoot.
Dale. Okay.
Yo.
You send out a candidate, and the feedback is this guy has flatlined intellectually. And the candidate says, why didn't I get the job? Do you tell him?
In a
you hire
fashion,
Jerry's
probably.
Kid to sell him.
Yeah, you hire my kid, and he's like, I don't have any details. All I know is you're out, and we'll keep you on file. Have a great day.
What do you, I'm asking Dale. I'm asking Dale. What was your answer there? I missed it.
I would dress
Dale.
Up whatever the I would dress up the response in
how
whatever
would dress
capacity
that up?
I would.
How would you dress that up? The guy's saying this
it's
candidate
not
is not interested in learning. He's intellectually dead. He's in a rut. How do you tell the candidate that in a tactful way?
It's always they don't feel it's a good cultural match. Sorry. You can always come. That's the old standby.
I gotta tell
right
you,
there.
Jerry beat you. Jerry beat you. And I gotta tell you, this show was a good prep for the next time you come on. Thank you.
Hey everybody, how's it going? How
anybody
is it
else,
going?
Anybody else?
I didn't tell the candidate he can't
it?
Stay.
Were
you
they,
gotta
hold
tell
on.
Him.
Now Nahez wants to take over the after show too. Go ahead, Nahez.
All right. Well, I grabbed my 38 special. No, was anybody else? Was your was it clicking in and out a little bit?
Nope.
Okay. Then maybe it's my cell connection.
Jerry, is my mic on?
Nahez, I know what that is. That's just new mayor you got up there in Detroit trying to turn on the street lights. and it's sucking out the power. So it'll be all right in a couple more days. Don't worry about us.
Jerry, am I on?
Who's on?
Yeah, you're on.
Jerry, it's Mike A. Stringer.
Mike A. Stringer.
Hold on a second.
All right.
Can you get better now?
Yeah, now, if anybody hasn't been keeping up with Mike's saga, he's been sick now for 8 days?
Today's number 9, but gosh, I just want to say something really quick, because in the middle of the show, I had to drop off. My wife was in a car accident. I'm on my way there now.
Oh, no. She okay?
She says she is, but the car's not.
Oh, so in other words, it was her fault?
I don't know anything. I'm on my way there. But
bummer.
I just wanted to make a quick comment on my way. Before I go cry over the $40,000 SUV I just bought her. You know what I kept thinking through this entire show? And I'll say that my first job in this business 22 years ago was with a national as a recruiter. My next job was with a BDM as an international. And then I worked managing several branches as a district director for a national. And I just kept thinking all the way through this show, you know, when you work for a national – the poor bastard, you just don't even know what you don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was surprised that he was so confident in calling people, hey, I got your resume. Do you want a new job? That's what I learned. The first thing was, that's not the question you want to know. It just shuts people off right off the bat. But maybe I was trained incorrectly. Maybe that's all I need to do is just start calling people, hey, you want a new job? No, thanks, bye. Maybe it does work. I don't know.
Terry,
well,
I just
don't remember how we were taught to say it, right? Wasn't it like, would you be open to a potentially stronger job opportunity or whatever the hell we used to say?
Or how are things going there now? Has anything made you think, hey, it's time to dust off my resume and see what's going on? I mean,
can I give scores real quick before I pick
up? Yeah.
So I'm going to give him a 75. Good guy. Again, the poor bastard don't know what he don't know.
Yep.
And I'll give Animal a 75 as well. I think he handled it well.
All right. Super. I hope everything's okay with your wife and all that, and work it out, man. Just let me one word of caution. Women don't know about this big picture stuff. She doesn't understand this whole driving the car, wrecked it, crashed it. Just be easy on her. They don't understand how important these things are. Just be cool. Just
oh,
be
I
cool.
Guarantee it by 5 o'clock
oh
tonight it'll
God.
Be so what kind of car are you buying?
It's like Jerry's Beach to his prom date.
Mike.
All right, man. Thanks,
Mike.
Yeah, see ya. Nahez, what did you think about the show?
Obviously, I've got a little fascination for people that do what we do and what's the core motivator, you know? The guy basically does overlapping work that I do. However, you know, he's got national badge it just makes you curious on what the motivator is. What are the metrics that he has to meet?
The motivator is he doesn't have to scratch and claw for everything all day long. He's got a pipeline of resumes from overseas that all
Correct.
He has to do is go down and call every one of them and ask if they want a new job.
And
he's
and
getting
that,
paid
I'm,
probably
I'm,
pretty
I'm,
well
I'm,
for that. So
yeah,
he's
and
probably got
that,
a lot
yeah,
of corporate accounts, big national accounts.
Yeah.
That plug in people.
Yeah.
Yep. And I'm not going to knock him. That's not my thing at all. Not whatsoever.
It's kind of like an animal in a zoo. Like say a lion. He's okay. You take the lion out of the zoo where he's being fed meat and stuff, and you throw him out in the wild. They're not going to do too well.
That would be the question. I think.
Yeah.
Now,
he sounds like a real good guy. And all that. I don't know how he'd do on the outside.
And the other thing is, in the show, it got all hung up once again, on this whole what exactly do you tell a candidate and about how do you deal with a candidate on the front end, the very first phone call or whatever, or in his case, the second phone call, which I found kind of weird. But how you deal with this whole salary thing, and I really think that, you know, it's like asking how do you deal with a toothache. You know, industries are different. People are different. People are different versus management people. I don't think there's a universal answer, but I think the way you approached it, Jerry, I guess I'm sucking up to you, was, you know, that matches how we operate as well, and I think that. But I don't understand what the big hang-up, why it had to be 15, 20 minutes of the show. You know
here's,
what I mean?
Dude, again, I'm going to remind you. Animal has a few things that he just really can't get his mind around about recruiting, and they are really key parts of this career, dude. And he thinks that some people are saying, well, you have to have a specific exact number that they swear to, and he believes other people don't ever even talk about salary. When he's
all
missing
right, well,
the point. The point is, you need to identify if salary is going to be a problem. And you do that by finding out if that's their only motivator. And if I'm talking to a guy or gal, whatever, that the only reason he would look at a new job is for a big increase, it's over. I don't care. I'm not playing. So long. Good luck. Because that's
all right,
the easiest person for the company to say, well, if you were only leaving for a big salary, man, we'll give you a salary raise. I mean, you are asking to deal with people in counter-offer situations, and I refuse. I'm out.
You're all feisty because you're all ticked off about the Virginia election results. Okay,
I'm pissed
off! So I'm going to give my numbers, but first,
right.
You know, our candidates in my office are typically technical candidates that make anywhere from 70 to 100, 110, okay?
Yeah.
And here's our broken record. This is our broken record pitch. Hi, Bob. Got your resume. How you doing? What's got you looking around? We're going after the motivator. Oh, by the way, I've got your profile up here. Just as a matter of filling in some fields, just give me an idea where you're at right now compensation-wise so I can just fill this in here. They almost 29 times out of 30 people just forfeit that information. Now, I know the opportunity in the back of my head. I've got that sort of that idea of approximately what it's going to pay, and at that point, I can revert. I can go back to the guy and say, okay, well, great. I've got that information. We're going to keep looking around for you if they're outside of of the range. If they're in the range, I can say to the candidate, hey, I have an opportunity here. It looks like we could improve on your, things compensation-wise. Let's talk about this. But we don't ever give the person a firm number because that's going to that's going to be between them and the company.
I have got to say, in all my life of recruiting, I have never used salary, even as you just did gingerly and as kind of a secondary thing, ever talk about improving somebody's salary. It's not what we're doing here at my company. It's put you in a better career position,
you know,
and the salary always ends up being bumped up. I mean, it always does.
Yeah, that's right. But the other thing is we do it as a matter of course as a note in our database so that we don't, like, if we run across the person again. I'm sorry for hogging the back.
No problem. What are your scores, Mayhez?
My scores,
Give us a range either. I want a specific damn score.
It's always set on expectations. So I think the guest did fine as far as being a real interactive show. I'm just going to give the guest a 60, okay, because he beat around the bush answering a lot of questions, and he also didn't have the examples ready to go. And I know Animal's been trying to work hard on getting those. And then for Animal, I'm giving him a 40. I'm just getting hung up on
what was the score?
Salary 40, and then the guest got a 60.
Wow. All right, man. All right. Thanks, Steven. Hey, I'm considering that Pixies show up there.
Dude, we gotta go.
I'm thinking about it. Yeah, thinking about it.
You gotta do it. Just
late
come.
February. February something.
I don't know, but you got to do it. Yeah, just say yes. I'll buy the ticket.
Is there a special section for people that don't want to have to just stand there with all those other sweaty kids?
Oh, that's part of the shtick, man. You got to do that.
All right,
Joey
man.
Joey Santiago, I mean, come on.
Okay. Woo. All right, next score. Who's next, Amy? Amy's probably heading over to get another bottle of wine. Anybody else?
Have a score. I came in too late today.
Doesn't matter. We need a score from you. You're obligated. If you're on the phone now, you've got a score.
75 and 75.
All right. See, that was easy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You don't feel like
middle.
You cheated anybody by just giving us scores, a good middle-of-the-road score.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Are you in Toronto?
No, I'm in Hamilton. I'm outside of Toronto, thank God.
Outside of the crack party. Yeah, that is crazy.
That guy is awesome.
You would not believe the amount of people that backed that man up. It's unbelievable. People are still backing him up.
Washington, D.C.'s mayor, Marion Barry.
Yeah.
I mean, they had him on tape.
Oh, my God.
Smoking crack. Bitch set me up. He still voted in.
We are in an era right now where politicians are just so shallow and stupid, and they are leading us. I mean, in the U.S., it's a grand total of about 1,500 people that lead us all over the country, 1,500 people. And then, of course, they have all their support people. But I saw that Toronto mayor. That is just absolutely incredible. No,
I have to tell you, I went into a client site. Now, I'm embarrassed. As a business owner, I'm embarrassed of this man and whatever. But I went in and talked to a CEO, and in passing, some multimillion-dollar company, and he stands behind the guy 150%. He's like, oh, they're beating up on him. They've got him locked into a corner. They're picking on him. And I'm just like, really? If this was one of your employees, you would have fired them.
Exactly. See, well, down here, that guy, and I'm just making a judgment call, but that guy's probably what they call down here a corporate capitalist. A crony capitalist. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something. You know, but anyway, it is. I don't know.
I'm absolutely against crony capitalism since I'm not involved in it. But I'd like some. And I would fill out the paperwork. Or whatever.
See,
it's
now
just
you
nuts.
Just
it's just nuts. Who else has a score on the show real quick? Anybody? Amy? Did Amy hang up?
I think so. I think everybody hung up.
Seriously? Alan?
Hey, by the way, I'm now up to 5 people 1 degree away from me whose monthly health care has tripled. Roughly tripled. It's all in every single case, it's roughly tripled. Now five people that I know have isn't that just incredible?
Dude, I'm telling you, man, the letter I got, as I understand this letter, okay, they are going to let me keep my plan for 1 year, but I have to sign up for it. They say that they're going to make it an effective date of December 31st, 2013. It seems like some weird stuff, man. It says you can keep your current policy, including any exclusionary riders, rate apps, by electing Humana Option A and agreeing to a policy amendment. The more or less what I determined out of this is once I have to go over to Obamacare, and it sounds like I've only got 12 months, which is far better than all of my friends that are just being canceled.
Right.
My monthly premium is going to go from $372.96 to $1,127.16. Now, they did this without asking about my income, whether I'm a Republican, Libertarian, Democrat,
right,
married,
yes,
single. None of it. They don't know any of it. This is bullshit.
But again, you know, I get home in my junk mail. You know, there's stuff from the local restaurants here. You know, the local Italian place. You know, here's a coupon: buy one entree, get the second one half price with the purchase of 2 drinks. Okay,
ooh.
I'm gonna save $6. Now, that's attracting people into, and it, you know, and I use coupons, whatever. But you know, it attracts people to go to that restaurant. My point is that the impact here is in the thousands and thousands of dollars. Are people basically sleeping still? The bottom line right now is that they're still sleeping.
Let's say that I was just moved over to this Obamacare, the ACA compliant policy.
Yeah.
It's $800 a month difference, okay? That's $9,600. That's about $10,000 a year. They haven't asked my income. If you don't get subsidies, and you only get subsidies if you make less than 30, so nobody gets any subsidies really, okay? It's crazy. It's really hard to believe.
Candidates. I mean, let's translate it into recruiting. I'm telling you right now, our offices. Phones are going to start ringing off the hook from people wanting to change jobs for money. Okay,
true.
They're going to be ringing off the hook, and it makes me wonder what the overall backlash is going to be. By the way, answer my question: are people just sleeping still? Is the vast majority of the public still sleeping?
They're sleeping until they get this letter.
Huh. Right. They just don't know what to do with it. It sounds like it's absolutely confusing.
Horrible.
I don't really know, though, Rebecca, if it's absolutely confusing, because I think it's pretty clear. Your insurance cost is going to go way the hell up. That's very clear, unless you're in poverty. So what's clear is we're now uninsuring the insured. That's what we're doing.
Right.
And where's the solution?
Right.
Like, I don't understand this. It's they're just doing this across the board, and there's no solution for anybody?
That's exactly right.
No, hold on. No, the solution is through Obamacare. See, Obamacare has decided that Jerry Albright, the Albright family, must have maternity coverage, even though we will not be getting pregnant, and I know for a fact. Drug dependency and rehab. It's a bunch of these things called essential health benefits. Well, they're not essential to me, but we all have to be covered for them. It's, I can't get too pissed off about it. What's that?
Are they setting it up that eventually it'll be a tax thing where you pay taxes?
Well, if you don't have insurance, they will be taxing you. So here's my plan, and I hope this isn't being recorded by the government.
I know what your plan's going to be. You're going to drop health insurance.
Absolutely.
Because you probably don't even rake up $1,000. Your whole family probably doesn't even rake up $1,000 or $2,000 worth of health care costs. And if you do break your leg or something like that, you're going to go to the ER and then get insurance.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what's going to happen. Homeless Bob is going to show up at the ER. They're going to go over to Section 5 over here where the federal agent is going to sign Homeless Bob up for the plan.
So it sounds like they're setting you up to have more structure like we have up here. You can't opt out of health care. It's part of your taxes.
Yeah. See, here we can for now.
Well,
Rebecca,
the thing is that for, you know, name your number, 20 to 40 million people, okay, for whatever the real number is, if it was 20 or 30 million people that were uninsured, okay, first of all, not every single one, not, a very tiny amount of those people have ongoing medical problems, okay? So you're talking about the average person, even if they're homeless or whatever, that he needs to go to the doctor a couple times a year. Well, they have spent enough money that we could hand, the government could have handed each one of those people a $200,000 check, cash, for the amount of money they spent to screw all the rest of us.
Yeah.
And now, you know, now.
But also, Rebecca, though, more so than just the people that are having their premiums go up are pissed. We all know, and we've watched President Obama just flat out just lie. Not mislead, not misspeak, not misencapsulate what he thought. Flat out lying. And I just this morning I saw on the news they dug up something just from him on September 26th where he like stops everything. He says, hold on. I want to be absolutely perfectly clear with everybody here. If you have insurance, it will not change. No matter what, you know, so emphatically underlining that nothing's going to change. That was just a month ago. That's the part that I'm pissed about, because if he would have told the truth, hey, we're going to raise everybody's rate because we want better coverage for everybody, it would have never passed. Never.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in the world of recruiting, I'm telling you right now, when this hits next year, they've basically let the people working at corporations off the hook for another year. Okay, but when this happens, everyone's going to be running to recruiters trying to get a new job to make $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 more. Period.
But the employers aren't going to be able to afford it. How are you going to switch jobs if your employers can't afford to pay you an extra time?
I'll tell you what they do. They need to sign up with me and work as a contractor.
There you go.
And you're in.
Well, yeah.
Contracting business has, like, doubled since Obama got in office.
See,
So,
well,
I mean, I'm happy with
Why is contracting
Obama.
Doubling, though? Like, I'm sorry,
companies just don't want to hire people.
Yeah, they don't want
to
have that.
They're willing to pay the premium to have these people in.
Oh, absolutely. Because contracting has steadily grown in its viability over the years. First of all, because companies can't afford to employ every person that they may need to have their skill. Most skills of a growing company, they only need them there for 9 or 12 or 18 months anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Once you come install this great big system, we don't need 50 of you sitting here sucking down the payroll. Or once plant over here and install the 7 different lines or product launches, we don't need you here anymore. So they pay the extra and they move on.
There's other industries like banking and finance and health and nursing and stuff like that that it's a little bit different, you know. I tell you what. Somebody, okay, Somebody needs to make a prediction on what's going to happen. What's going to, well, $100,000 engineer in Detroit, Michigan, you're probably talking the other costs of keeping that person as an employee with all the benefits and everything is somewhere between $40,000 and $50,000. So you're really not that far off. That turns into a $75 per hour rate, and that's probably pretty much a going rate for a person to make $100,000, isn't it, Jerry?
Probably right in there.
You're right about right there. So, I mean, it's really not much of a difference.
It's just the ability to, hey, we're done with this project. We don't need this. We don't need these six people over here. So this is their 2 weeks' notice. Without them having to then pay unemployment and just all of it.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's been good, everybody. We'll see you on Facebook.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
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 Mama! I don't want to die, and sometimes wish I'd never been born at all. Carry on, if nothing really matters.